This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. The once crowded Democratic field of U.S. Senate candidates narrows. How this puts Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes in a solid position to win the primary election. Plus, a string of endorsements. The two notable Republicans who are breaking away from Trump's preferred candidates and deciding to back someone else in the governor's race. And amid heightened threats, a new report shows why election officials need more protections for themselves and voting equipment. All this and more on Rewind, your week in review for July 29th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm Scott Bauer.
Scott, thanks so much for filling in this week. Another busy week. I usually say that every week, but this has really been a mountain, I guess, to climb up this week to get through it. We're first going to start with a story that kind of developed it a little bit later in the week about a Racine County man admitting that he committed voter fraud and essentially kind of bragged about it to try to expose vulnerabilities in the Wisconsin My Vote system, which basically you can sign up, register to vote, and get an absentee ballot. Now, this man, his name is Harry Waite. He leads a government transparency organization which focuses on voting issues, and he said he did this and tried to file ballots, and he did successfully for Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, the Racine County Mayor, Corey Mason, and he basically said, I did it. I wanted to expose these type of things. So this, of course, really outraged state and local election officials. It led to an emergency meeting held by the State Elections Commission Thursday night, which we both had a lovely time listening to. But basically, before we get to kind of the recommendations that they got to, they didn't really make any actions. But the big question now is going forward, are they going to prosecute this man who admitted doing this? Let's first take a listen, and then we'll discuss the details.
The WEC is aware of efforts by individuals to submit fraudulent absentee ballot requests in order to demonstrate a perceived flaw in the My Vote Wisconsin website. And yesterday, the Racine County Sheriff's Office issued a press release alleging vulnerabilities in the absentee ballot request system. There is no indication of any vulnerability with the MyVote application. The idea that absentee ballot requests made online via MyVote are more susceptible to fraud is false.
Part of my questioning tonight was I want to know what can and cannot be done, what would be effective. And it seems to me, for example, there are those who want us to shut down MyVote for this purpose, when all you'd have to do is just start sending out emails. You can go to you can take the list that you've purchased and just send emails to clerks saying, start sending out ballots. It would be easy, just as easy, perhaps easier than doing it on MyVote. There's also been a proposal to require photo ID for every absentee ballot application. That's not the law. I want to make sure people understand it. It could have been the law. The Governor Evers vetoed a bill that would have required that. We wouldn't be in this situation.
Apparently, Harry Waite gave an interview and he said, quote, what I did was illegal. Not only illegal, it was criminal. And then he also went on to say, because something is illegal, does that mean we shouldn't do it? And I'm astonished and outraged that he thinks this is something cute. When people confess fully in the newspaper, we don't really need to go into a lengthy analysis over it when it comes to saying, do you have probable cause to believe that a violation of Wisconsin statutes has occurred?
So WEC commissioners basically signaled support for referring criminal charges, but they stopped short. They wanted to do things like send postcards to voters who may have been vulnerable about Waite and others who have been doing this online. But, you know, that's the big question right now. They're going to be meeting next week, Scott, and we don't know if DAs are looking into this at all either.
Mm-hmm. Right. Ultimately, we'll be waiting to see if the district attorney in Racine County files any charges for what Harry Waite admitted was a crime. You cannot do what they did under the law. And so they are arguing that it shows a vulnerability. An analogy could be driving 100 miles per hour down the street to prove that you can do it, but you know that the law says you can only drive 35. So they have done something now. We'll see if prosecutors follow through. There have been other cases of potential voter fraud from previous elections that have gone to DAs, and they've all taken kind of different approaches You've seen some charges brought for voters who had a UPS mailing box in one county but not in another. So we'll really be anxious to see what happens down there in Racine County with charging decisions.
And we know the one person that is unlikely to file charges is the one that brought this issue to light in a Facebook post. And who I'm talking about is the Racine County Sheriff, Christopher Schmeling, posted earlier this week basically saying, hey, look, people need to look into this matter. But he said to some journalists that he's not going to prosecute and basically put the blame on election officials to change the laws. But we all know this is, if we look bigger picture, Republicans, we haven't talked to many of them about this yet, but this is probably, you know, what they've been signaling for a while. We want election integrity measures. There wasn't any other bill introduced that would fix what he did. But I think that's what we can see maybe going forward is saying, well, Governor Evers vetoed all these bills. We could have had the chance to make this system more secure. So maybe that's messaging we see down the line.
Well, and the sheriff, let's remember, was a supporter of Donald Trump. He also earlier called for five of the six elections commissioners to be charged with a felony related to nursing homes in a vote they had taken. No district attorney filed charges against them for that. You know, his position on this stuff has been made pretty clear. And so, you know, really, it's not going to be up to him anyway as to whether charges get filed. So he's brought it to light in one way, but we'll see what happens next.
Right, and we're inching very close to the August primary. So what happens next is definitely something that we're all keeping an eye on. And the U.S. Senate race narrowed quite a bit this week, Scott. We had four as the top candidates. Mandela Barnes was always in the lead, but just this week, three candidates dropped out of the race. It first started with Outagamie County Executive Tom Nelson, Alex Lazary on Wednesday, and now today, State Treasurer Sarah Godlewski throwing in the towel as well, and they are all endorsing Mandela Barnes. Now, we just kind of came from a press conference of Sarah Godlewski kind of having the same messaging that we heard from Lazary. It's that, you know, we kind of reached the point we weren't going to get, weren't going to beat his lead in the polls, and we want to build a stronger coalition going forward with the ultimate goal. This is their messaging of trying to defeat Ron Johnson. So, I guess, were you surprised by this many dropouts in one week? I don't think I've seen something like this.
No, I was shocked, as I think all of us were, especially Alex Lazary. You know, Alex had been essentially tied with Barnes in the polls. He was within the margin of error on the most recent Marquette poll. He spent over $12 million of his own money on this race. And then Wednesday, seemingly out of the blue, he dropped out and endorsed Mandela. Godlewski also spent a lot of money on this race. Tom Nelson, not so much, but that was his whole angle, that he was kind of the, you know, the populist, folksy guy with no money who's going to run kind of that flank. So now what you have is them all getting behind Mandela Barnes, the lieutenant governor. You do have a number of other lower-tiered candidates who remain. All of these names will be on the ballot on August 9th. The ballots are already, you know, votes are already being cast. I think as of yesterday, there were 152,000 absentee ballots that had already come in. So now you have potentially confusion with voters. We'll definitely see some of these candidates having votes and some voters having to maybe try to spoil their ballot and go in and vote again, which is a whole process you can go through.
All right. Let's take a listen first from Alex Lazary and Sarah Godlewski from both of their announcements this week, and then we'll talk a little bit more about this race.
What led me to drop out is, you know, this has always been a campaign where we've said the number one thing that we can do for Wisconsin is making sure that we defeat Ron Johnson. Every day matters, and that's why the second I realized that there was no path forward, we made sure that we did what we thought was best for us to be able to defeat Ron Johnson, and that meant getting with, I think, the person who's best positioned to do that and who's been running the best campaign in this primary, and that's the lieutenant governor.
But the bottom line is, as you all know, I am a tell-it-how-it-is person, and I take a very common sense approach. And I know that right now what we have to do is we have to get behind Mandela Barnes to defeat Ron Johnson. And that is exactly what we're going to do.
We also heard from Sarah, too, kind of, I don't think she was necessarily planning to drop out earlier this week. I asked her on Wednesday, are you going to stay in the race right after Lazary's announcement? And she, just about 2 weeks ago, coming off the U.S. Senate debate hosted by TMJ, she I think it was like a seven-figure ad buy, trying to really close that gap. But, you know, things went another direction. Also, none of the candidates really went negative in this race. We were kind of waiting for that. Maybe that was going to happen at the debate. We didn't really see that. Sarah kind of had her moment on abortions, which she capitalized in that campaign ad. But, you know, Scott, you asked Mandela Barnes an interesting question at the press conference. You know, how do you start, facing some of the issues that he hasn't been, attacked on in the past? He didn't really answer the question, but do we see that going forward now?
Right. I think it's a good point that these candidates really kind of were hands-off in the primary. They really kept their focus on Ron Johnson. And so the plus side of that, if you're a Democrat, you would say, you know, you come out unscathed, you come out united, you come out not having, you know, fired inward. However, the flip side of that is, you come out potentially untested because you've got all these arguments that you're going to hear really starting immediately today. Ron Johnson tweeted as soon as the news broke about Godlewski dropping out. You see other Republicans kind of, you know, they had been sitting at the ready assuming that Barnes would be the nominee anyway, but now we're seeing that starting kind of full force. And it's not that Barnes is untested. I mean, he's run statewide before. Mm-hmm. A lot of what we're going to hear during this campaign we've heard before, but everything old is new again, especially when you're running for the U.S. Senate. And the megaphone or the magnifier on this race is going to be so huge, and there's going to be so much money spent because potentially the majority control of the U.S. Senate right. is at play in a battleground state. So everything that you've ever heard about Mandela Barnes and about Ron Johnson, you're going to hear again and again and again on TV and everywhere ad nauseum.
All right. Can't wait with all those new ads, I mean. I'm just joking. Also, some notable endorsements this week. If we pull up this screen, too, of course, we would add Godlewski under Mandela Barnes. Rebecca Clayfish, I think, made some good headway with some endorsements, of course, because she's competing with Michaels, getting the ultimate backing from former President Donald Trump, also former Governor Tommy Thompson. This week she got former Vice President Mike Pence. Earlier in the week, Texas Senator Ted Cruz. So bigger picture, we're seeing more of Trump's really strong previous allies breaking away from his preferred candidate and trying, to really energize the Clayfish campaign. But, you know, Scott, do endorsements, that's the big question, do endorsements make the difference? Are voters hearing the endorsements saying, I'm a big Ted Cruz fan, now I'm going to vote Rebecca? That remains to be seen because they usually don't pull that much weight.
Yeah, I think Donald Trump's endorsement obviously is a big deal. And for Tim Michaels, that was a big boost for him when he was early getting into the race. It's interesting, you know, you can kind of get into the weeds on these endorsements. What does it mean? You know, Cruz won the 2016 Republican primary in Wisconsin when there was a pretty strong Never Trump movement, particularly in the Milwaukee suburbs. And he won that primary, and we all know that Donald Trump went on to win the state of Wisconsin in 2016, lost it in 2020. Scott Walker was endorsed Ted Cruz in 2016. He's a good friend to Mike Pence. You know, he did debate prep in Madison with Scott Walker, Pence did. So it's maybe not a surprise that he was able to help get Pence and Cruz to come on board for Clayfish, but it does set up that interesting dynamic, especially with Trump and Pence potentially being at loggerheads right. on the national stage. You now have them picking different candidates in our Senate race, governor's race.
Right. All right. Speaking of the governor's race, another news this week is we knew this was expected. I guess we can say Trump was going to be coming for Michaels. A lot of us had a hunch, but now we know it's official. Next Friday, a week from today, he will be hosting a rally in Waukesha to support his, of course, endorsed candidate, Michaels, in the Republican primary. You know, I think what the big thing I wanted to note with this topic this week is what are we going to hear from Trump? Of course, he's going to say, go out, vote for Michaels. But you could never, there's always some type of fireworks. And we know he's been fighting, on his social media app, kind of bullying Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. We've kind of recapped that multiple times on the show, saying he's not doing enough. He doesn't want to push for decertification. Is Voss going to be there? Probably not. He has been backing Rebecca Clayfish, of course. But is he going to take shots at some top Republicans?
I've got a few questions to look for on Friday. One, not is Voss going to be there, but is his primary challenger going to be there? Trump is not endorsed in that race. As you said, he's been very critical of Robin Voss. Does he invite Adam Steen to this rally to mm-hmm. come talk about decertification? Because that's Trump's big thing. He wants to decertify, even though it's not possible. Tim Michaels just this week said he's not for decertification. So you've got that dynamic. Is Trump going to talk about his endorsed candidate not being for decertification in Wisconsin. And the other interesting thing, among others, is the location of this rally in Waukesha. You know, that is an area that has been becoming less Republican and definitely was not a good area for Donald Trump in Wisconsin. You would have thought maybe he would have picked a different spot in the state to win over voters than down there, just because that's been a tough area for him. And for the Michaels campaign, that may be a little bit, maybe they'd wish maybe he'd pick somewhere like Wausau or somewhere else where suburban voters who are really Clayfish, that's her core constituency, wonder how that might play.
Yeah, that's definitely something we're all looking for when he has this speech, too. And you're probably, you know, also kind of talking about those suburban moms that I think Rebecca Clayfish has been really trying to pick up in the suburbs. So we'll see. And, I mean, maybe he will take shots at Michaels while he's up on the podium. Also, maybe it's his opportunity to announce officially that he's running again. I don't know if a lot of people are thinking about that, too. Also important to note that of the candidates across the United States that Trump has endorsed for primaries, he has had more victories than losses, but he has had some losses. So, we're in a wild card state. So it remains to be seen if that really helps carry Michaels to the finish line, and we'll find out on August 9th. Also wanted to touch on something that the AP reported this week. It does specifically just talk about Dane County, but it was a report by Dane County officials and election workers that they're basically saying, hey, we have vulnerabilities. We need tighter security for election officials. And Scott, you and I both know, we've been reporting on this, that the threats made against election workers has seen a dramatic uptick, and many of them feel really unsafe at times. I'm just going to read a quick quote from Dane County Clerk Scott McDonald about this report. He's been to all of these offices. He's talking about Dane County and around the country election offices, and the access to the staff is quite easy, and that needs to change. There needs to be some sort of barrier to protect staff, and they're basically saying, you know, anyone can walk into a municipal building, a local clerk's office. Of course, it has to be open to anyone. Luckily, no scary incidents have happened in person, but it's the calls, it's the voicemails, it's the threats, even some people saying they're having some people, you know, outside their house and feeling unsafe. So I guess this isn't anything up new, but we could see maybe, you know, state lawmakers or the county take more action to give them some more money.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's a sign of the times, and we've seen this, as you referenced, around the country. Milwaukee County also, some threats there. So I think they were very forward in this report, and we'll see if the recommendations get acted on.
Yeah. Also this week, another busy week, disabled voters filed a federal lawsuit. Now, there's four individuals with disabilities that are asking a federal court to basically ensure they can have help returning their absentee ballot. Well, why? Because the state Supreme Court decision was a little murky. They opted to, of course, ban ballot drop boxes and ruled that the voter themselves should return their ballot in person at their local clerk's office or put in the mail. But what about a disabled voter who can't seal and fold their ballot and they can't go down to their mailbox and put it? So that's what is a little concerning for some people. That is main reason why they filed this lawsuit, Scott.
Yeah, the Supreme Court ruling did not, and they came right out and said, we are not addressing who can mail the ballot. Disabled voters say that is protected under the Americans with Disabilities Act. Federal law says that they can have assistance mailing a ballot. When this came up during an Elections Commission news conference, Administrator Megan Wolf said she basically recited state law that says the elector must mail their ballot. So that was cited in this lawsuit, along with the Supreme Court ruling, as a reason for essentially going to federal court to get some clarity, to get them, plaintiffs hope, to say, hey, federal law says if you're disabled, you can have assistance getting your ballot to the mailbox. The four people in this lawsuit each describe why they can't physically do that, or how it's incredibly difficult for them to do that or to deliver it in person. So we'll see what the timing is on a ruling on that one.
Right. I think we have plenty of other lawsuits that we're paying attention to as well. I do just want to play a video, too. Disability Rights did have a press conference this week, just talking bigger picture. They've been trying to do a lot of advocacy work. I know I talked to a woman in Milwaukee who is paralyzed from the neck down. She says she's basically trying to let people know it's okay to vote. Mm-hmm. Because we know what happened back in April. There was a lot more murky laws going on. People basically illegally cast cast a ballot. We don't have to get into all the weeds about that, but there was a different court, lower court decision that said they couldn't. They can only themselves put it in the mail, and so that made things a little uneasy. Let's just take a listen to this video of them talking about the Teigen decision and kind of letting voters know what their options are.
If you plan on voting in person, either early or on the day of the election, the Teigen decision didn't change anything about that for you. If you plan on using an absentee ballot, it didn't change the way you fill that ballot out and the requirements to get it or what you need to put on the outside. All those things are still the same. So once you seal that ballot, the question then is, what do I do next? And that's where Teigen came in to play. So you've got that ballot and you're looking at it and think, what do I do? You got two choices. One is you can put it in a mailbox, U.S. mail. The other is you can deliver it to your clerk. Is it illegal for a voter, including a disabled voter, to have assistance putting their ballot in the mailbox? No. Where you do want to ask for that modification is if you're going to need assistance taking it in person to the clerk. Call them up. Tell them you need a disability-related modification. Fill out the little sample form that we have on our website. Give it to the person who's delivering it for you along with your ballot. And take a picture of everything before you send it off so you have a copy.
Also, talking about absentee ballots that we just heard from Disability Rights Wisconsin, there's been a lot of election officials kind of reminding voters right now that we've had those three Senate candidates drop out. We had Kevin Nicholson about 3 weeks ago. I know it was the first week in July. He dropped out of the governor's race about spoiling your ballot. If viewers don't know what that is, basically you can go to your clerk's office, write a written statement, send them an email, and you can request a new ballot. If you picked one of these candidates that are no longer on there, you can do that. I know Milwaukee officials are holding kind of an explainer today because it's not really something that we've seen this many candidates drop out at once. So I think
I can't ever remember there being this many,
right,
this late.
This late. Mm-hmm. So that's just something else to remind people, and that's an issue that, you know, make sure you do reach those deadlines if you want to revote again as well. We also want to recap the Republican governor's debate. I know you and I were both covering it. It was this one, again, was also hosted by TMJ4 in Milwaukee. There was a lot of takeaways. It was the first time that we saw Michaels on a debate stage. Clayfish took a little jab at him at opening statements because Michaels did not attend one in Green Bay that was hosted by a conservative radio host. So her opening remarks were kind of like, thanks for joining us, Tim. But other than that, no real fireworks. No one really attacked each other. We have something more to talk about in a radio debate earlier this week. But I first just want to play the video first. And leading up to this, it's basically Michael seemed a little uncertain on what DACA students are when he was asked the question multiple times. We also kind of got clarity from Rebecca Clayfish on her abortion stance. And then Rantham in his final pitch to voters of basically why he should be in this race. Let's take a listen and then we'll recap.
I want to have more training in high school. Train these young men and women to become welders, machinists, tool and die makers. This is a great investment for the state of Wisconsin to have our education train people to build things with their hands. Again, that's what we've been doing since the founding of our state. We're good at it, and that's what I want to do as governor.
Just a quick yes or no. Yes for DACA students?
I'm sorry?
Yes or no for DACA students as well, the incentives.
What kind of students?
DACA.
The Dreamers.
DACA students. You know, I want to look at the details on everything before I agree to anything on that.
So let me be very clear here. Miscarriage care and ectopic pregnancy treatment are not abortion. Abortion is illegal. Ectopic pregnancy treatment and miscarriage treatment are not abortions. And I'm not a biologist, but I am a woman, and I'm pretty sure I'm the only one on this stage, or will be
there's
on stage
two of us.
With Tony Evers, who, standing up here behind a podium, who understands what it is like to be pregnant and to take a pregnancy test.
I have to leave you at that.
I am the breath of fresh air for what people have been looking for in this job for a long time. Leadership, courage, conviction, passion, sense of urgency. I can get things done quickly because I've proven it, not just in the private sector, for 45 years in multiple organizations, multiple industries, and multiple cultures. I'm a school board member, just reelected in April for the fourth time, and I didn't even campaign for it because I wanted to see what would happen. Overwhelmingly reelected. Why? Because they know what they got with Brampton. I'll get it done.
So some of the takeaways that I wanted to go through, the first one was decertification, which we talked about a little bit earlier in this show. We finally kind of got clarity from Michaels on that. He's been really saying, well, I'm uncertain the election was stolen, just kind of dancing around that question, never committed if he would sign legislation to decertify. He blatantly said that is not one of his priorities. So we'll see. Maybe Donald Trump hasn't seen him say that yet, but maybe he's going to be posting on his social media. I mean, who knows? That was one of the takeaways. Also, abortion, like we mentioned. Of course, we know all of the candidates on the stage there do not want to add any exceptions to Wisconsin's 1849 law that bans all abortions unless a mother's life is at risk. You heard Clayfish there basically saying, you know, certain medical treatments are not abortions. So she further elaborated. And then DACA, which is a deferred action for childhood arrival. It seemed like Michaels didn't know what that meant. And then paid family leave, I do want to talk about, because all of them said they would be open to the idea, but it was Michaels that did say he would sign legislation. He would sign a bill that would require employers to provide that. So I thought that was kind of strong. Anything else or that you kind of took away? I know I kind of almost just highlighted everything there, Scott, but
yeah. I think those are the highlights. Yeah. I mean, I think the decertification comment from Michaels was the most interesting mm-hmm. on that topic. The DACA, you know, fumble is what it is. Ultimately, at the end of that debate, I'm not sure that voters learned a whole lot more about these candidates than they didn't already know going in.
Yeah, it was not too many surprises. Mm-hmm. Of course, when we watch, we think we know, ooh, that's a little bit new, so we'll mm-hmm. add it to our story. So also, no, like I said before, no one really took jabs at each other. But there was another debate this week on the Dan O'Donnell radio show, and we saw Clayfish and Michaels spar quite a bit over raising the gas tax. Mm-hmm. Now, this is over allegations of Clayfish running some negative ads saying Michaels lobbied for raising the gas tax.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so this debate is interesting because it's on conservative talk mm-hmm. radio early in the morning on a Wednesday morning, seems to be right talking to their audience, the people who are going to be voting in that race. And not getting too deep in the weeds, but the issue is Michaels was on a number of boards that had for years been lobbying for increasing the gas tax. Rebecca Clayfish says that correlates to him advocating for it, him saying, hey, I don't agree with everything that these groups advocate for that I sit on the board. You can't possibly agree with everything. I personally am not for the gas tax increase. So both sides have, you know, an argument to make there. It's clearly been an issue that Clayfish has been hitting him on. Scott Walker is in an ad talking about it. And that was a clear issue of contention during that debate. So a little spark of life there that we didn't see during the televised
right.
debate.
Right. And of course, it is an issue that people care about giving right now with inflation. I don't think anyone right now would be raising the gas tax.
Right.
But it was a big issue that we saw in 2018 when Governor Evers was running on a ticket because he did propose a slight gas tax increase, mm-hmm. which Republicans also attacked him for on the campaign trail.
Right. Yeah, so obviously the inflation, gas prices, all of that we're going to hear a lot about between now and November 8th. And so, and we're going to see how if it plays out in this primary, but after that it will be a big issue against Tony Evers for sure.
All right, Scott Bauer with Associated Press, thanks so much for joining us this week for Rewind.
Thank you.
For now, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm Scott Bauer.
Thanks so much. We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.